reconvene the September 22nd meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. Let's do a couple things first. If you have a cell phone, please turn it off now. We're going to have a lot of discussion here, and the commission is going to need their undivided attention on a number of different things. So please turn off your cell phone. The other thing, please take off your hats. This is a commission meeting room. It's not a dock. We have things to discuss here that are important. They're important to you, and they're important to us. For those of you that are just arrived to this meeting here and weren't here in the morning, the commission has added a number of things to the agenda, and one of them is the discussion of the limited public fishery, oyster fishery regulations and eligibility that was passed last month. So we're going to take that matter up now, and then we'll get into public comment. So I'm going to start this because I have a few things I want to say here. One is that the public oyster fishery is important to the economy, it's important to the watermen, it's important to the bay's ecology as well. Have the wild stocks have grown over the years, so has the number of oystermen. We now have 10, what's the right word? Triple the number of licenses that we did just 10 years ago. The stocks have grown, but the number of people that are trying to make their living on the public oyster fishery has grown as well. The spat sets in 2013 and 2014 weren't really very good. We all have to acknowledge the fact that we have fewer oysters now for the public fishery than we did the last few years. At the same time, we have a larger pool of participants, and in fact, much larger. We do not have enough of a stock here to adequately support all the people that want to make their living oystering on the public oyster rocks. We have 1,829 hand scrape and dredge licenses. Let me say that again, 1,829. The need to limit participation in the fishery here is important to the health of the fishery and to ensure the full-time oystermen can actually make a living. All that said, I don't think we got it quite right. I think that the 20-day rule that we passed for eligibility wasn't quite right. I think it's confusing, and I think that more work needs to be done on this. I don't think everybody understood the nuances of the 20-day average rule that was used to determine eligibility. So, it's important that we get it right, and I don't think we did. I've heard a lot of complaints. I've heard a lot of people that are very passionate about this issue. I want to let you know that we heard you. I heard you. Everybody heard you. You were heard. So to that end, while we had the best of intentions in adopting a limited oyster dredge fishery here and limited participation with eligibility, that wasn't quite right, and more work needs to be done on it here. I think that a lot more work needs to go into this. I don't think the industry is quite ready to accept the fact that the stocks are not large enough to support everybody that wants to make their living off of them, either in a full-time or a part-time way. I wanted the commission to discuss this and to see where they want to go with this. And I'll open the floor here for some comments here from the public here on this particular issue before the public comment section. So, said my piece. I think you all know how I feel about this. I think that we didn't get it quite right here, and I want to see what the commission wants to do. There's a variety of different options. Anybody else want to join in? Mr. France.
Yeah, I think we kind of got the first part of what we wanted right on this with you know, people that hadn't reported or weren't using a license. But as far as a full-time waterman losing his job because he didn't work 19 days in a fishery is putting a hardship on him and his family. And when I was at the advisory committee meeting, I kind of got the idea that you know, if somebody tongs some and they hand scrape some and they dredge some, it was going to kind of count together, figuring that they were a waterman. And then if they fished and they crabbed And all these things were counted together in his portfolio to show that he was a waterman and he did deserve his Hans Grapefort Dredge license. And speaking of the, you know, in getting into this, the entire dredge fleet from the western side that goes across the bay all lost their license. They're all totally done. You know, if this was an issue with Tangier where they had lost their license, they would have a hardship. And I think because of the difficulties of getting across the bay in the wintertime, you know, this dredge fleet should be given a hardship excuse. And just speaking for people in my area that can't get maybe the days in, and I'll give you an example. Last few days I've done a little driving. In order for me to get to the closest hand scrape area that's open, I have to drive 104 miles. That's the closest. People in my area, some of them have to drive further than that. If I go to the rotational area, well, 104 miles is the Great Wacomica. If I want to go to the rotational areas of the Rappahannock, it's 120 miles. If I want to go to the York River, it's 157 miles. If I want to go to Deep Creek and work on the James, it's 183 miles. So people with a family, especially youngsters or whatever, that come from my area, which doesn't allow a hand scraping, we're at an extreme disadvantage to try to get in 19 or 20 days. So I was hoping that the commission could certainly, you know, consider all these factors.
Mr. France, I thank you for those comments. Let me add a couple of things here. I'll augment them a little bit here. The 20-day rule for eligibility, I think, is flawed. I think also there's more discussion that's necessary towards those folks who have not used their licenses in the last couple of years. There's a lot of people that feel very passionately whether they use them or not, they should have the right to use them, and I think that begs for more discussion. And I think it begs for a better understanding from the watermen here on the simple fact that we now have 1,829 hand scrape or dredge licenses, and that's way more than this fishery can handle. But I don't think that they understand that the intent is to preserve this. Then there was best intentions, was to preserve this public fishery for the full-time oystermen. This has gotten conflated in a lot of ways to the full-time watermen. Pretty much everybody that has these licenses is a full-time waterman to some degree or another. They just might not be participants historically or recently in the public oyster fishery. So I think there's a bit of confusion about that matter as well.
Ask a question.
Mr. Zeter.
You said there's a number of options we have. What are they?
Well, off the top of my head here, we could rescind the 20-day rule for eligibility and let those folks that have 19 days or less and others that would otherwise meet the criterion back into the fishery. Or we could stay the course and say we've made the best decision possible at this juncture in order to conserve and preserve this fishery for the full-time oystermen. Or we could kick this back to the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee in its totality and have another run at this, have a better examination and a better examination on various criteria that could be used to determine eligibility.
If we decided to kick it back to the advisory committee, could we maybe have some specifics addressed, you know, not just kick it back to them and let them mull it around, but understanding the issues that have been raised since we enacted this, and then focus their attention on some specific issues so that then we're better able to pass whatever regulations are necessary.
You can charge the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee with whatever you think is pertinent.
Well, who could we look at our staff and say, what are the real issues? And, of course, there have been some issues come up about, you know, the amount of licenses given, the areas and things like that, the rotations, the things of that nature. I mean, who would actually put that together?
That would be done with staff in conjunction with the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee.
What detriment is it to the fishery if we decided to kick it back to the advisory committee with those stipulations and rescind what we got right now?
That's a very good question here, and I'm going to call on Chief O'Reilly here to give us a little better sense of what we can expect if we repeal the limited entry provisions and take some other measures, and what we can expect for the upcoming year.
Okay, thank you. And I guess one thing right away is this limited entry system was a start, or thought to be a start. There could have been other methods chosen. So I want to, before I get specific, talk about what the commissioner said. One thing the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee did, and I was sure that they saw that, was not only the oyster harvester, but the harvester in all fisheries. So part of the information the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee saw was what individual did throughout all the fisheries. They were presented with all that information. They did not support that information. Let's say they did not choose that information to go forward with. I think with the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee, you can expect a couple of things here. One is it's going to be worked out through 2016. So we spent three long meetings in 2015 working specifically on some ways to do effort control. At the very end, the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee said, maintain status quo. Keep things the way they are. So in order to change that situation, since all but one or two perhaps supported that from the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee, there would have to be directives to the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee that they knew their agenda was to look at effort control for the future. I think the benefit would be that this time around the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee could initiate, based on what they've already seen in 2015 with all the information staff provided, they could choose the directions that that might go. But I think short of letting the committee know that that is the mandate, essentially, to look at effort control, it could turn into a situation where they, at the end run, don't want to take licenses. We heard that throughout. There were Shellfish Committee members who said, you're talking about taking licenses. And no one's easy about that at all. But I think when we're talking about the problems the commissioner outlined, which are poor spat sets in two consecutive years, that now, if they'd been good spat sets, we probably wouldn't be here discussing this today. I think there's a real big difference in the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee in getting the right input to the commission. It shouldn't be open. It should be directed. There should be criteria that they go by in order to arrive at the type of decision and recommendation that the commission really needs. And the commission and staff would much rather have the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee doing just that than for staff to be operating differently than the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee.
Mr. Zietner.
Is there a specified time that this advisory committee meets, or can we say, look, we need a decision in 6 months or 3 months, or I mean, is there? Do we have any?
The commission has the ability to place the time frame. In 2015, it was every month, which was a lot in 2015 because the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee said, you have to generate this data. We want to see the data. So there was a lot of data work up in between each meeting. A lot of that data is there now. So it would be up to the commission to set a sunset on when you would want a recommendation. The practicalities are that once 2015 is ended, that's most of the season right there. You know, January and February has a few areas, and 2015, even from all expectations, are that, as in the past, the oysters will be harvested relatively quickly. So it is imperative to look beyond right now. That's very important, given that the commissioner has highlighted the fact that maybe the route that was taken wasn't the best route. And Mr. France, I think, gave some very good comments that were sort of looked at, but not exactly, that if you're an oysterman, then maybe it is a combination of what you do, not just looking strictly at hand scrape, strictly at dredge, and making it point blank like that. It may be difficult to identify the full-time commercial fishermen these days. I mean, there certainly are some, but to use that criteria may be kind of difficult when you're looking at just the oyster fishery of the future. And maybe enough years weren't used. Staff had started with 2011 through 15, ended up with 2013-14 and 2014-15. Mandatory reporting data is judged to have become fairly accurate by 2011, but that was not presented to the commission as the route to take, even that. And that would have made some differences. In fact, that may have removed more licenses when you think about it. So I think, Mr. Zedron, that you have some good ideas, but I think it's up to the commission to make the call on how this goes forward with the Management Advisory Committee.
Mr. Zedron.
Since we have a rotating stock on the public grounds, rotation on the different areas, if we rescinded what we have put in place and referred it back to the advisory committee, would there be an irreparable harm to the stock on these particular rocks that we have or in the stock in general?
The only harm comes when those who stay too long and grind away is the phrase used, that you're really grinding away. The other harm is we have a shell resource which has become very valuable, the shells themselves, and with a lot of effort, some of those shells won't end up right in the area where they should. They'll go back to the mud, for example. That's the kind of harm. But overall, the rotation system is set up to be closed by virtue of literally you can't make a day's work. Once harvesters can't make a day's work, that essentially closes that area effectively. You'll have some hangers on, but really they'll move on, and that's been the pattern. So, again, I think we have to remember that what staff had brought forward would have impacted about 9% of the harvest. All that means is those oystermen, as the commissioner identified, would have taken up that 9% that wouldn't be taken by those who had harvested less than 20 days. So the harvest is going to be taken area by area.
Mr. Ballard.
Am I right when we're talking about these licenses that they're 2016 licenses? So we have till January 1st or maybe a month beforehand to get this kind of worked out on the license issue, correct?
We wish that were the case. But I think what we're looking at is after the close of today, we've really got the October meeting to take care of this if there were going to be changes, because license sales start December 1 for 2016. So that really, impedes making a quick solution. And in fact, if the commission wanted to do anything in October, it would simply be staff trying to rework options for you to choose from. I think you've seen all the options at different times, so I'm not sure if that's really to the benefit of the commission. The other part of it is, as I mentioned, except for a few areas, most of the standing stock is going to be taken by the end of December.
Other discussion? Ms. Haney.
I would just like to say that there were unintended consequences from my vote last month, and I would support the possibility of sending this back to SMEC to revisit.
Ms. Erskine.
So I appreciate, obviously, we have a full commission room, and there are a lot of passionate people about this issue.
including these commissioners that are in front of you all, as well as the advisory committee, which is made up of some of you in the room as well as some of the members here. And we spent a tremendous amount of time discussing this. In terms of the limited entry and the license issue, that was one aspect that we worked through last month, but there were several other issues that we worked through, one of which was the day of the week. I just want to be clear that we're, in this discussion, only talking about the licenses that were proposed to be removed. And if I can ask a follow-up question of the commissioner, there are essentially three categories, I guess, as I understood. One was a licensee that did not actually purchase a license in 2013 or 14. And there was another category of somebody that purchased a license in those 2 years but did not report harvest. And then, of course, the third one of purchased a license but was not on the water more than 19 days. Is that correct?
That's correct. I believe those are the three basic categories that were components of the limited entry system that we ended up adopting last month. And I'm just one vote, one voice of nine on this commission here, but I think that we have an obligation to do this right, and I think I would prefer to see a wholesale relook at this as opposed to trying to managing pieces of this and cobbling it together on the fly. Mr. Erskine.
In a follow-up question, so, and I know we had a lot of information and data at the advisory committee as well as here at the commission presented to us, but what is the number we were talking about in those categories? Do we have that information, Mr. O'Reilly?
I believe it was over about 570. I'd have to look at Dr. Wesson in the hand scrape and another 200-plus in the dredge. Total. Are you asking just zeros?
Correct.
Okay, just zeros. Pretty close, you said.
So okay. 700 some less. Okay.
And I also wanted to respond to something you said. You know, depending on the commission's intent today and their actions, there was also another unintended consequence, which we have by virtue on the agenda of an emergency amendment to the regulation, and that was there were individuals who would have made the 20 days of harvest either in one season or the other or the average of both, but those same individuals are frozen from getting a license. So that was another unintended consequence because they made their harvest prior to when a harvester had to have the gear license. So you know, that's one other thing to mention. On the day of the week, certainly it'd be encouraging if the commission does want to have the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee to look at this again. That is something that could be possible for 2016. I know what really threw everyone off right away was the idea of a very low bushel limit. Four was mentioned, and everyone understands why that was a non-starter. But there are other ways to look at this as well that the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee could look at this. It's been since about 2005, maybe, when there was six bushels per person. So there are conventional ways to, you know, try and make sure that the seasons last a little bit longer per area. But I think the advisory committee, you know, they're there. They should be able to help out with specifics.
Mr. Tankard.
Well, I would certainly support sending it back to the advisory committee. I think that what we found were, once we saw the unintended consequences, they're too great for us not to take into account at this time. And so I think we can't maintain the status quo. We have to do something. And I agree with the commissioner, to try to cobble together something today that would be appropriate for the future is too much to ask. I think we need to be a little more thoughtful, and that thought's got to take place primarily at the advisory committee level. My thought.
Mr. Erskine.
So I think unintended consequences are pretty important, and I've heard a lot, you know, from commissioners here, and I agree. I think that category of 20 days or less was not fully understood, I don't think, and also might have been not an appropriate step that was taken. But I want us to be clear that those 700-some licenses with the other two categories that didn't either report or didn't actually buy a license is late in effort in this fishery and was not actually there in the last 2 years. So we have to recognize that that could become very active effort. And in addition to, you know, maybe rescinding, you know, those categories and putting it back to where it was, you may have certainly increased effort for that amount of time.
I agree. That's certainly a concern. That's certainly very much of a concern. And to that end, you know, if we do this, we're going to have to look at something for January and February here, and it occurs to me that the four-day work week that was adopted last month for the fall is something that I think at a very minimum could be applied to the rest of this season. It's something, but it's certainly better than not having a license for some of these guys. Mr. Packard.
Commissioner.
Well, I just think we have to also remind ourselves we had a control date.
Thank you.
And if someone thought that perhaps the control date was meaningless, that doesn't make any sense. We're sort of foretelling you, hey, look, control date means that if you buy a license after this date, you might get shut out. I mean, I think everybody seemed to understand that. So I think not to pay attention to that control date would be unwise.
And it does occur to me here that if we did kick this back to the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee and they came back by suggesting use of the control date, that while that would impact the new people into this fishery, we could do this in a way so that with license transferability, like we adopted last month, they would still have a way to get into the fishery by getting a license from somebody who was getting out of the fishery. So it wouldn't like they would be precluded from the fishery entirely.
Right.
I mean, there would be other options. But those are types of things here that I think deserve more and fuller thought and consideration and maybe a recommendation from the advisory committee that has some cohesiveness to it as opposed to us either here or at the next meeting trying to jerry-rig bits and pieces of this together into something that may or may not work or may not be as far as we need to go in order to preserve this fishery. Mr. Zedrin.
Got a question. Could we take it, we rescinded this aspect of this limited entry, and instead of taking licenses, just freeze or put a moratorium on new licenses? And I'm not talking about my license runs out this year, I'm going to get another one. I'm talking about a new oysterman. In other words, if you didn't have a previous license, you can't apply for one. But if you had a previous license, you could apply for one because I understand they're annual, right? Yearly. Okay. So if we took and rescinded our decision here and went with the Shellfish Advisory Committee recommendation to go with the status quo with the proviso that it be sent back to them to come up with some kind of recommendation on the harvest, and that that you have to have had a license before you can get a next year's license. I mean, would that work?
I think it may be too early to judge that because we have the freeze on hand scrapes and on dredges right now. That was established in February of 2015, and that, in fact, is what's causing part of the unintended consequence we have with individuals the commission deemed to be part of a system because they had 20 days or greater, yet because of an early action by the commission, they're prevented from buying a license. So I think it may be better to look at the control date, which is what I was going to add a moment ago, and Mr. Tankard brought that up, and start to look from that aspect. But when you look at the licenses, if it's as many licenses as 1,800 plus, there are only 2,900 registered commercial fishermen. That is a lot of licenses that are already available except for those who got caught because they didn't purchase it in 2014-15. They did not purchase it for that season when it was required. But yet they have good history. You know, they have good harvest history. So I think the best thing to do before recommending a license freeze again is to look at all the information and look where the impacts are, and look at them, you know, pretty thoroughly, at least back to 2011. And then you have the control date. I don't know how many of the 700-plus licenses that haven't been reported would fall out if we just use the control date of July 1, 2014, because that only affects one season now. But I suspect it would still be a lot of individuals. And that's something certainly that everyone should be on notice, that that is a prime criteria. And in fact, what we talked about a lot on staff is the fact that in other limited entry situations, they may have taken longer. Striped bass started in 1991, it ended in 1997. Different limited entry all the time. There are still people who are not too pleased about that system today, to say the least. If you look at the limited entry fisheries I showed the commission last month before Dr. Wesson gave his presentation, we have a number of them. And they did have a bit more input, time, and thoughtfulness perhaps wrapped into those limited entry systems. But limited entry does leave haves and have-nots, and that's, you know, that's something that has to be considered pretty carefully, making the next steps. And we probably can't do it in one commission meeting in 2016. It'll probably have to be at least two commission meetings to get everyone to understand this is the direction, I understand the direction, I support the direction.
We're not.
We're not. Thank you.
Mr. Neal, you look very thoughtful.
Well, you know, we have nothing in front of us as a staff recommendation changes to make. And so you know, I'm not going to make any recommendations to off the top of my head of regulation changes. And so, you know, if we're going to change something, I want something that's thought out and presented and reasoned, and that's going to take time. If you're going to send it back to the advisory committee, and we're at the end of this year, and so, you know, you're really looking, we're really looking at 2017 regulations. Is that what we're looking at, 2017?
Probably the fall of 2016 wrapped around into the spring of 2017, that season. So October 1, 2016 is realistic. Any time earlier is a real stretch to do anything earlier, and the consequence wouldn't be there anyway. You'd want to do for the whole season. And that would, you'd be in the same situation the commission is in today, that there'd be a fall harvest. Because of the license sales time period of December 1, you would be doing most of the activity on 2017. But your decision would be early enough so that other arrangements could be made by those harvesters.
Why not? Fly-by-night changes, I don't think, are good.
Any other thoughts? Does anybody have a preference on the path forward?
I think we all kind of lean towards sending it back to the Shellfish Committee and say, rework this and come back to us with two recommendations.
Next summer?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. We're certainly not going to have anything done by next meeting.
Nope. Well, if that's the case, then there's the next logical discussion, which is what to do for the rest of the season. Last month, we adopted the four-day work rule, Monday through Thursday, from October 1 through the end of December, but we are anticipating the limited entry system to kick in January 1. But if that's not going to happen, it would seem to me that a four-day work week throughout the entire season is a logical thing to do. The limited entry will not remove the effort here, and I believe it was 9%. A four-day work week has the added benefit of being enforceable for law enforcement. You all might have some other suggestions or ideas on how to go forward on that end of things. Ms. Haney.
Were you recommending a four-day work week into 2016? Is that what you
think? I think that if we're going to do this, if we're going to kick this back to the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee for further work and further discussion on what is a better limited entry system, that we need to do something to get us through this season in its entirety, not just the four-day work week till December, and then have the normal five-day work week as of January 1. Ms. Haney.
I'd just be cautious of a four-day work week. We gave season extensions last year due to bad weather. If we have bad weather and a four-day work week, that's something we need to consider.
Well, Mr. Commissioner, if I can just say, we could advertise for the October meeting. All it is an advertisement of changes to the seasonal length, changes to the days that are available, essentially for January and February, and a little bit of, you know, further into April in the James. We could advertise that as we normally do, and then you could next month just have that to consider. You may want to consider lower bushel limits, you may not, but you have to understand that right now we're status quo. If you make that decision today with 8 bushels per person, and the change, as Mr. Erskine had mentioned, is that Friday is not a day of harvest. That's the main change. So it might be good to have that suite of information to look at next meeting.
Mr. Zedron.
Let me ask. We had a lot of discussion last month about this, but my understanding, my take on this, is that these public rocks are fished out fairly quickly. Is that a fair statement?
Fair statement.
And so
matter of weeks.
So, what'd you say?
Matter of weeks.
Matter of weeks. And from the waterman's point of view, I thought this was the idea, is that if that's the real fact, why stretch the season out? If you give them 5 days, because they're there and listen to what he had to say here about driving 100 miles or 180 miles, it would seem to me from the waterman's point of view that he'd want to go over there and get whatever he could get as quick as he could and then move on to some other fishery. And so just by having 4 days a week as opposed to five, all you're doing is extending the time period to get all the oysters off the rock. Is that right?
That's right.
So if we had the five-day week, it's more logically, economically for the watermen, even though they would exhaust the stock faster. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Fair statement. And so the question is only if you want staff to advertise for next month so that you can deliberate those next month, or you want to, if you do something now, it's going to be an emergency in a way, or it's going to end up coming back in October anyway. So if you make changes today, it's an emergency, it comes back in October anyway. If we advertise for an October public hearing and keep it fairly broad, then you're right there to make a decision in October.
Mr. Pallett.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we'd do it today, because we're talking about the 2016 season. We've got at least 2 meetings to be able to address those issues. For 2015, we're fairly set, so I think we probably need to vote on the limited entry today, and then we can advertise for the public hearing to talk about any other measures for the 2016 season.
Seemed to be a prudent course of action, I suppose, if that's the path we're going to take. Mr. Erskine.
I understand what we're talking about here is rescinding the limited entry and things, that aspect of what we did last month. there is an added benefit. From SMAC's perspective, when we met, in 2015, there was discussion about status quo, and that was voted on. There was a motion. And in that motion, there was a lot of discussion, and the suggestion was made that 2013 and 14 harvest on public ground was very good, the best the Commonwealth has seen in a number of years. We haven't seen a downturn in harvest. And that was part of that discussion during SMAC, that until we see a downturn, why are we talking about some of these management measures? And that this will afford us the opportunity, with everybody in the fishery that currently has a license, to be able to say we saw a downturn or we did not. So at least in one aspect, we have more data to work with and maybe make that more informed decision. And I understand, I agree with Mr. Ballard, that we made the four-day work week for October, November, and December. But I'm not sure at this point in time that I would be in favor of saying, well, because we rescind the limited entry, we should back up with something in January, February, and March and just go to a four-day work week there. If we are going to see what's going to take place in 15, 16 in the fishery, then let's see what's going to take place and have a more informed decision.
I hear you, Mr. Erskine, and I agree mostly, but I'll just make a point. What we're going to see here is going to be a hard lesson, I fear it's going to be a very hard lesson out there.
But I would say that during the SMAC meeting, there was a lot of discussion about we haven't seen this fall off on harvest, and some were suspecting that maybe we will not see a fall off in harvest. And so that will play out. And if it's a hard lesson, it's a hard lesson.
I'm just saying,
trust me.
My fear.
Yeah, and this isn't the way we do fisheries management. It's ad hoc, but that's part of this, I think, that we have to be willing to accept.
Mr. Ballard.
How much data will we have on the harvest by our November meeting? Will there be any kind of feedback available from what's been going on?
Well, I think one thing may be you may not have a November meeting if later on today when you have to vote on the
December meeting.
Yeah, December. Yeah.
And the other part is I would say 4 months back we'd have an idea. So not very much to go on. We have mandatory reporting. Mandatory reporting is mandatory. We are one of two states on the East Coast that have that level of reporting, but it's not real time. There's still all the information to be entered, everything else. So I know a lot of people are disappointed that we don't have real time data, but there's reasons why we don't.
Is there further discussion on this?
So what staff presented you with was just one of the options. There were multiple options the commissioner talked about. The one you've talked about most will show you exactly in Regulation 720 what would be removed by virtue of the strikeouts. When this regulation is shown to you the next time, it will have rescinded, if that's what you choose to do, rather than strikeouts. But you can see all that remains is the control date in paragraph A, and at the very end, what was adopted last month, that there would not be an agent situation, which really has been in existence since 1993. It's not a new situation.
Mr. Neal.
So the question is whether to rescind the actions of the previous month, send it back to the shellfish. This all pertains to the 2016 season. If we rescind the actions of the previous month, would that also be rescinding the four-day work week of this year?
No, we would just be rescinding the limited entry criterion, the limited entry system, and leaving the rest of the management measures that were adopted last month in place. The four-day work week was the big one.
That was pretty much it.
Ask a question.
Mr. Zeder.
In light of what we're talking about, I mean, why would we want to rescind paragraphs C and F?
I'll start with F first. F is about transferability, which has not been established. That was part of if there were a limited entry system, then starting in January 1, 2016, there could be transferability of licenses. Without a limited entry system, the commission hasn't determined that there should be transferability. That's why F is not there or is stricken. C is really part of D together, and D is talking about the 20 days, and that is what the except as described in section D. So it's a parallel that you're saying the licenses should not be sold to anyone that the commission has not accepted, as in D. And D was the 20 days. It's regulation language more than anything else.
Mr. Neal, I fear you are scared of an unintended consequence of doing this much.
Well,
am I incorrect?
Well, I kind of defer to the expertise of Dr. Wesson, and so he knows a lot more about this than anybody, actually.
Would you like to hear from Dr. Wesson?
Oh, I always like to hear from Dr. Wesson.
Dr. Wesson, could you join us here?
Any specific question?
No.
I at least can put up what you're looking there at. So.
Can you speak up?
I said I can show what you're looking at. Because this is the... we're starting back over, and we're losing a year. That's the long and short of it.
Do you think we can do better?
I think this. We need to impact the same number of people or more, but the people will probably change. So some hard decision will have to be made.
So basically, that's kind of sums it up. We're talking about delaying hard stuff, but the hard stuff's going to come regardless.
I think that that's true, that there are hard decisions to be made. And that will be incumbent upon this commission. Lord knows we make plenty of hard choices along the way here that are not necessarily popular. But in this particular situation, I think that the criterion that was used, my personal belief, the criterion that was used pertaining particularly to the 20-day rule, the 20-day on average rule, was something that had unintended consequences to it. I don't think that the community fully understood it. I think that there were other criterion that could be used that would be more understandable and explainable, and that, frankly, I don't think that the industry has reached the point yet where they acknowledge the need to do some license control. and to some significant license control. And I'm not sure that the watermen understand that we now have 1,829 licenses for hand scrapes or for dredges for the public oyster rocks. And that is an unsustainably high number. So maybe a bit more discussion, my thinking is, another look at different criterion, something that now everybody knows is something that needs to be addressed. The question is how it's to be addressed. Maybe to that end, we have people that are more understanding about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and have a better understanding of the criterion we're using to make these decisions. Mr. Zedra.
Yeah, I think part of the big deal here is that you know, we need to work together with the watermen and the industry and everyone. And I keep hearing out there that, you know, why are you doing this? Because we haven't seen a downward trend. And maybe if we agree with them and pull these restrictions back and see what happens. And if it comes to be that whatever staff has suggested by their research and the stock is down, then that message will go to the watermen, and then maybe they will come forward with restrictions on their own, understanding that we want to protect the true watermen that happens to make a living. An oysterman that needs to make a living by this fishery. So I think that can help us. If we do that and they find for themselves that, you know, the stock is not there, that they need to sort of regulate themselves, and maybe they'll come up with some regulations and say, look, this is what we need to do to sustain living. So I think it's a plus by doing that.
Mr. France?
Yes, I think that that the watermen realize that we're going to be in a downtrend for oysters. But I think it's the criteria we use to choose who's in and who's out that they have a problem with.
Other thoughts?
A procedural question again.
Yes, Mr. Neal.
Are we allowed to rescind a regulation without going to public notice?
It would be an emergency measure. It would be aimed at the benefit of the seafood industry. There's language within our emergency, within the code that allows emergency measures. Duncan has that open right in front of him. Because you know that off the top of your head, and he's precognitive.
So if we did that today, we'd still have to come back. We'd still have to go to public notice and come back next month again.
Correct. That said, I wouldn't expect a lot of public comment next month here on what a terrible thing we would be doing by rescinding the limited entry system. But I'll tell you what, if you want, we can take the temperature, because I believe we have some watermen in the audience.
Well, I guess that's the question. Are you looking for a motion now, or you want to go that route?
This is a little unorthodox. But this is a rather unorthodox situation. I think I'd like to open the floor here and roll the public comment period into partly this discussion, because I believe that there's more than a few people here that wanted to comment on the limited entry system that we had adopted last month. So, Mr. France?
Yes, I have one more thing before we go to public comment that I'd like to
please
ask some discussion from the commission on. In let me see. I'm sorry, but anybody declaring a hardship, if they want to appeal it, it's medical, military, or a conflict in reporting. Because of what has happened to the Western Fleet of dredge boats and stuff, I was wondering if we could add geography into that because of where somebody resides or what they have to do. What the commission thinks of that?
Well, I would respond by saying that we can charge SMAC to look at anything that you think is pertinent here, and if you think that that's pertinent here, and I believe you sit on SMAC, that would be certainly part and parcel of the discussion you'd have as a board member.
Well, so, you know, I'd like to hear from the rest of the panel what they may think.
Would everyone on the commission like to add that into whatever discussions SMAC has on a new and improved revised limited entry recommendation at some point next summer?
Sure. See, no problem with SMAC discussing everything and anything that they want to discuss.
And I would suggest that what the commission sends back to the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee for discussion, I think, should be viewed as guidance, not marching orders. Jesse heads nod. All right, so I'll be a little bit unorthodox here, and my role is chairman of the commission here. I'm going to open the floor for public comments. I would like to keep this to the public comments that are pertinent to the discussion that the commission has just had. If there's another matter that's not on the agenda, we can get to that then as part of the public comment period. So if somebody wants to come up here and add some public comment, please come forward. Mr. Green, I see your hand up.
Members of the board, Commissioner, thank you for this opportunity to talk to you. There were several things that said that could be confusing. One is the 1,800 licenses out there. I don't know whether you think there's 1,800 boats, but it's not. So usually you got 2 to 3 men on every boat. So we're probably talking about in the neighborhood of about 600 or 700 vessels. And that's for the entire state of Virginia. But there's still a fair amount of boats. We've got a lot of areas that's been closed off that the watermen can't scrape that can be utilized to have more areas to work. One I've talked about before, Red Oak out on James River, yeah, they took away about over 600 acres of bottom that we used to scrape, which would probably account for another 100 boats, I would imagine, could work these areas. They've been taken away and they were given back to the hand tongers. But a lot of this area is deep water and the hand tongers cannot work it. That would be one thing. And there's other areas, too, I would imagine, that could be opened up. We've got a lot of rocks up in the James River that could be worked, but the hand tong areas, and I think we've discussed it before, but because it's delicate and they don't want to scrape it, but I would imagine with the right kind of scrape and a situation that these areas could be utilized. We've got thousands of acres up there that could be used. They're just laying there, the oysters are snapping out, if you're familiar with what I'm saying, and it's not being utilized at all. Myself, personally, I've had a dredge license. I haven't used it in the last few years, so as of this year, I can no longer obtain a dredge license according to what was said, just because of the fact that I didn't work. I have got private ground, and I've done pretty well at it, so I haven't worked these areas. I left it to the younger guys, the ones who want to work and needs to work. And I imagine there's a lot of more people within my same category feels the same way. We're not greedy people. And we all realize each and every one of us has to work. So, therefore, I hadn't worked. And I just allowed a lot of other boats to work. And I think it's a bad decision to take a waterman's license away because they go from one thing to the other. It's a freedom of movement. Sometimes he might be crabbing. He may decide not to oyster for a few years. He might be doing something other else on the water. It's more profitable to him. So he's not in the oyster industry right at this point in time. But then at some point in time, what he's doing may turn to get bad, and he needs to come back to the oystering. Sometimes people get tired of doing the same thing all the time. You might get tired of doing oystering or crabbing or one of the other. They might want to go fishing for a season or two. But you've got to have the right to move in and out of these functions, even though you don't do it constantly every year. Because what you're going to wind up with is a bunch of people can only clam, a bunch of people can only oyster, and a bunch of groups only going to be able to fish or one or whatever the other, the crabbing. And it shouldn't be that way. Everybody should have the right to move about within this function. And one of the last things I would like to say is on the oysters, on the sampling of the oysters. I think patent tong, and I think that's what Dr. Weston, they use a pair of tongs to go there. And it's not really a good thing to tell what your assessments are. Because a patent tong, even though you measure when it's large on the bottom, when you come to, you're probably only taking in maybe 2 square feet of bottom because it doesn't reach the whole length of those tongs. And if you drop, and it's possibility to go in places where you'll hit bed bottom each time, it would be much more better to take something like a dredge or what we use to scrape with and count your sets and count how many oysters is within that lick. That's how we judge ourselves on when we're working on these rocks. I catch so many oysters per lick, that way I know I'm doing good. If it ain't there, I'll go look somewhere else until I get what I'm looking for. to allow me to catch my account for the day. But there are other ways that it's about, and I think that we're not really getting a truly good set, because I got a lot of ground in James River, and the last 2 or 3 years has been some of the best striking years I've ever had. I mean, the oysters are just striking all over everything. It's just, it's incredible. But they're saying it ain't. It's been 2 or 3 of the worst years, so something other's off. But I mean, I can see what I got, and the public rocks is just offshore of me, so I imagine they should be pretty good as well. Maybe, maybe not.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you.
Please come forward, sir. Please come forward. Let me give a refresher here, folks. If you have a cell phone, please turn it off now. Also, could you keep your applause down here? We're going to have a serious discussion here. I'd like to hear from everybody, but let's keep this under control and make this continue to be a very civil discussion. I'd appreciate it. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner and members of the commission. My name's Charles Williams. I'm from Reedville. I've worked on the water all my life. In recent years, I've been not a professional waterman, in that it's not my vocation, but I continue to get my license. I've been getting a license ever since I was a kid, my waterman's card ever since it was initiated. And even though I haven't been using it, like the gentleman was up here a while ago, and I agree with everything he said, he's a pretty knowledgeable fellow, and you can tell he's worked on the water. But my concern is I've been trying to keep my license so that I wouldn't lose it. And now you've changed the rules on me, so looks like I'm going to lose it. Now,
Hold on a minute, sir. The discussion here has been to change the rules back so it doesn't impact your license.
I understand. And, well, that's why I'm here. And I agree with the direction that you're headed.
I guess I'm asking everybody that wants to speak to the commission here, if you had some talking points based on what the previous decision was, let's address where we're at now and where the commission seems to be going.
Okay. Here's what I want you to consider in the direction that you're going. I'm spending about maybe $500 or more a year in fees, and I'm not using my license. So it looks like to me I'm not hurting a resource. I'm not using my license so these folks can do the best they can with it, with what I've got. But I still don't want to lose my ability to be able to work the resource should I choose to do so down the road. Now, I don't have that many more years that I'm going to be involved in it, but I want to do it as long as I feel like I can. I've got children and grandchildren. In the past, we've been able to pass that license along. I would like to have that opportunity for them. But like I say, I'm putting in money to the commission. It's not costing the state. The state is making money off of me, and I'm not taking any of the resource. So I just feel like that ought to be in consideration with the direction that you all are headed. And I think you're charged with a important responsibility, and I wish you well, but I need to put that on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Someone else? Please come forward.
I'm the nurse's water steward, so you might not really understand me. But what about somebody that just wants to get into business?
What's your name, sir?
Very timing.
We need your name for the record.
Rick Hyatt.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hyatt.
If someone, you know, already bought the boat, didn't know this was being thought about until, you know, I bought the boat, got grounds, wanted to work public grounds, and, you know, then this happened. So,
do you have a waterman's card?
Well, I was getting the process of doing all that, and all this happened. It's like telling somebody you can't be a fireman or something. I mean,
now the question,
to limit everything.
The question is whether is not whether or not to limit the number of watermen. It's the whether or not to limit at some point here the number of people in the oyster fishery.
I understand that. Okay. But what I'm saying is, you know, if you don't have it. No, previously you can't get it.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address the commission on this issue? Yeah, please come forward, please. Being redundant. Welcome, Mr. Johnson.
My name is Ben Johnson. I appreciate the opportunity to address y'all and would like to go over a brief summary of the SMAC through the course of 2015 and how we ended up. And we met five times throughout the course of 2015, all but the February 23rd meeting were to address effort reductions. We worked on it. We discussed options. We were thrown a tremendous amount of data from staff, and we came up with the motion of leave everything at status quo. It is the first time since the hand scrape fishery has been functioning that staff, mainly Dr. Wesson, put forth a projection for the 2015-16 harvest of 130,000 bushels. That is where the status quo motion started, to have a baseline of the same amount of effort against his data of projected harvest and allow us to move forward and see either, okay, his projections are correct, we need to start making some decisions, or projections are a little bit off, we need to find a different way to collect data, different methods to collect data. And that is where July 20th, 2015, that's where the SMAC committee left it to be presented for the commission. 10 days later, on the 30th of July, the SMAC committee members received an email from Dr. Wesson, and I know this is a little off the subject because it pertains to the four-day instead of the five, but it was never once brought up at any of the five SMAC committee meetings. And the email reads, "The commission approved advertising for various scenarios to reduce harvest effort for the coming oyster season. Attached is a table with four potential choices for hand scrape and dredge season in October through December 2015. The committee voted to make no changes for the coming season, but if you would please look at this chart and select the choice that you would support if you had to pick one." Done outside of committee. Again, they begged us the entire time during all five meetings to please give them something to present to y'all as the commission, and never once were these 4 days, this option of 4 days or 3 days or 5 days with less bushel limit, ever presented for discussion or debate. And the main thing that I ask you, if you do send this back to SMAC to be discussed and have something figured out for down the road, is that you take us seriously and that you take our recommendation as a concise group of individuals who work the resource, buy the resource, sell the resource, and want the resource to last, because our futures depend on the resource lasting. And another thing that I ask the commission to maybe consider is code section 282-203 allows the commission, says the commission shall prepare and implement fisheries management plans so as to preserve the Commonwealth's exclusive right to manage the fisheries within its territorial jurisdiction. And the blue crab fishery was considered, everyone knows where that is, was, and has been, and it was considered important enough that code section 282-203.1 set up a blue crab fisheries management plan that goes as far as having it reported to the legislature, the progress, the decisions, and there is nothing even close to in place for the oyster industry or oyster fishery, be it hand scrape, be it dredge, be it shaft tong, anything. And I ask that the commission take that piece of code and move forward with it to have set guidelines, a set plan, and something to walk forward with, and parameters, and again, checks and balances to be presented outside of this commission to the legislature so that it
Mr.
doesn't...
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
How about the question at hand here? Would SMAC, would you approve of this limited entry system being kicked back to SMAC for further discussion?
I said that in the beginning, yes, sir.
All right. Just want to make sure that that was clear.
I just asked that the SMAC committee be taken seriously and the decision that comes out of the SMAC be presented to the committee, to the commission, as that decision and be weighed as that decision.
All the advisory committee decisions are relayed to the commission.
I understand. We made the recommendation that's now everyone wants to tend back to at the last SMAC committee meeting. And obviously, I would apologize for not being at the last commission meeting, but obviously it either got overlooked or it got thrown out there and swept under the rug and not considered for what it was and the fact that it took 5 months of meetings to get there.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to comment to the commission here on the matter that's before them? Mr. Brown?
My name's Mark Brown. I'd just like to address one thing. How do you scroll this back down? This is my son. Let him do it. So this will tell you how advanced I am with computer systems. I want to go back to the first thing about the control date, if I could. Right there. Oh, right there. Blow that right up. I ain't taking that one. There you go. Is it? I just want to make sure. This is the issue I want to address right here. This is the control date. Am I not right?
Yeah.
Is this what y'all are using for the control date? July the 1st, 2014. Most of these individuals bought licenses, I think, if I'm not correct. I know my son, I can't remember exactly what date he bought his on. All these licenses issues y'all are talking about, these 1,800 and some odd number licenses that were issued, up until last year's harvest season, there was only one, and I'm not saying some of the individuals didn't buy a license. That is some of the controversy here that we're trying, us as watermen are trying to explain to y'all. These numbers by y'all's staff have been inflated. And I know some of y'all are smart enough to comprehend that 1,800 licenses last year that were issued, if you only had to have one license per boat, some of us individuals have two on the boat, some of us have three on the boat. All right, if you have three people on the boat, before all of this stuff was implemented, like in 2011, 2012, 2013, there was only one license issued per boat. One license. Last year, we were forced, so to speak, for every individual that had a harvester's permit so that they could sell 8 bushels of oysters, every individual had to buy a license. So you went on a minimum. You went from 900 licenses that were issued maybe in 2013 or 2012 to 1,800. And that's some of our concern here is the numbers that staff has inflated to make it look like, man, we got this big industry that everybody's jumped into, and that's just not so. There's probably not another 20 or 30 extra boats, if that, that are working last year versus the year before. And everybody that works on the water, all your Marine Patrol officers can attest to the same thing. These numbers that y'all have used have been inflated to create this problem. And there's other issues that don't have anything to do with this. It's just James River, for one example, in James River, every oyster rock that was very productive in the James River had the fossil shells planted on top of them. So some of your numbers on some of these rocks are going to show that there's a decline in oyster harvest, and that's due to Mr. Wesson's planting those blue fossil shells a foot deep on top of some of the best rocks that we have. I mean, any of this stuff that's going on, they're just. I can go back to another issue, which was the $150 fee that you're charging for condemned.
I'm sorry,
I know, that's fine,
Mr. Brown.
I want to bring this issue up because it's something that needs to be addressed. There's probably four or five of us that move condemned oysters in the state of Virginia. I'm talking about at a profitable business. Y'all passed a regulation that affected four or five people, and I wasn't notified, and I'm one of those four or five people.
Mr. Brown, while the subject is oysters, this isn't a forum here to raise every slight or thing that you disagree with in oyster management forever.
That's fine, but the issue about the license is a fact. And y'all, I mean, okay. He probably, I don't know whether he'll get up and admit it or not, but that is a fact. That was an inflated number that was used to derive some of these management programs that y'all are implementing on us.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. We've been so civil here. Please. Sir?
My name is David McGinnis. I've been producing a documentary and a mini-series on Waterman for the last couple of years in Chesapeake Bay. I just wanted to just bring up a couple of subjects, you know, because I've had a different perspective on things because I've been able to film on boats in Maryland. I've been on survey boats. I've been in Virginia. I've really been all around, and I know this is an important issue because I was just on the Eastern Shore filming some of the repletion activities on sanctuaries. The VMRC is doing the Nature Conservancy on the seaside, and I was there with a lot of the watermen, and obviously they're very concerned about this particular issue, so I thought I would come today and, you know, participate in some way. I guess the first question, the one thing that really spoke to me was your question, Mr. Zidron, that spoke to something that the watermen have been talking a lot about. In particular, one young waterman that I've worked with quite a bit, who's a very hard worker and, you know, speaks very intelligently on the issues at hand. His big issue was with what you asked about in terms of is everything exhausted right away? From what he said and from what I observed filming on the last day of harvest season in Saxes Island, he said that he caught his limit every day he worked last year. I believe there were 2 days, one when the boat broke down, which actually happened to be the day I was with him, and another day he had to be at a wedding or something. I know I was there on the last day of the harvest season in Saxes Island, and it was an extended season, as you know, because of weather last year. And from my observation, when I filmed, almost everybody caught their limit that day. You know, so you were asking, well, would reducing the number of work days be a benefit to the watermen? You know, and obviously that's a question for others. But, you know, it seemed to me that I observed that the Virginia harvesters were doing very well harvesting their limits because there was good management in Virginia in terms of rotational harvest, whereas in Maryland I would observe that, you know, things would be great in the one area and then they would be by, you know, January, February, March, the harvester would be working for 8 bushels a day. I mean, you have different limits, but they would be catching a small fraction of what they were catching because they don't have that rotational harvest system where they open and close. The point that the waterman made to me was that part of why this decision was made was that the numbers showed that, you know, harvest declined in certain areas. And I can't confirm this, but his comment was that the reason harvest dropped off in certain areas was because other areas were opened. So, I mean, I guess just listening to everything, my question would be to, you know, if possible, if you're reconsidering all this, to obviously, and you're going to give this a year of study, to take a close look at, you know, really take a close look at it and individual harvest and weather conditions. And, you know, obviously last winter presented a lot of challenges in terms of weather, which would just lead me to say that, you know, these are all family businesses, not just jobs. And it's kind of, you know, I consider the fact that since I was on a boat with a couple guys who sunk last year in the ice above the Bay Bridge, I went out with them the first time they returned to the water after that. And they were breaking ice, fishing rockfish because they were on a quota system where they had not fulfilled their quota. They had left a lot of it. Because they had very little, so they wanted to have a couple days of work each month, but then it froze up, so they were forced to go out on the ice. And one of the boats sunk, and they were able to survive by jumping onto the ice. So I saw really the danger that these men are wanting to put themselves into, you know, if need be, to sustain their livelihood. And you know, my question is just what kind of precedent would set for the future if every waterman this winter is to say, well, I've only got 19 days, but, you know, and it's frozen solid, but I can't afford to lose my family's income. Is it going to set a precedent now that watermen are going to do anything they can to go out there and get 20 days? Because who knows, you know, what's coming down the pike? And that also leads to the question that, you know, traditionally a waterman, this is a point that a Tangierman made to me when I first started making the movie, is that traditionally they would move between fisheries to allow the fisheries to replenish themselves. So if the oysters were really worked over, they would maybe go catch yellow perch or rockfish. You know, we may be beyond that point in some ways now, but, you know, the seizure of licenses based on work days kind of removes the waterman's ability to say, well,
excuse me, sir, I think we're kind of beyond that point. And the question is whether or not the commission should not continue to use the 20-day rule and instead revoke that, repeal that measure, and kick it back to the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee for other criteria and further discussion.
You said that the question was, you know, I had a comment about the discussion that took place here, and you know, I think it's relevant to the topic. You know, it doesn't allow the watermen to let up on the resource. They have to get 20 days hand scraped, 20 days dredged, no matter what happens.
Well, they haven't yet, and the question is whether or not they'll have to down the road. Well, that's not even the right question. The question is whether or not that should no longer be the eligibility criterion. So, do you have anything else to add? Okay. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to address the commission on what's been discussed? Please come forward, sir.
Hi, how you doing there?
Okay.
I'm Reed Williams from Reedville. All right, y'all, you all put 4 days. 4 days, we lost 1 day. How about the Carolina skiffs that can't get out there on that fifth day because of icy weather and blowy weather? That's what I'm. On that fifth day, you can't get out there. Why can't it be 5 days? I just want to make it quick.
Oh, the commission adopted a 4-day work week because of the depleted harvest status, the lowered harvest status. Depleted isn't the right word here, and it would be applying just to the beginning of the season, October 1st to the end of December.
Okay.
There shouldn't be anything iced in that time period. Please come forward, sir.
One of the more recent watermen has been established in this new entry to me. My issue is that I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, let's say now I'm just crabbing, and I drive 3 hours to my boat. I go out and crab my 8 hours, and I drive 3 hours home. I'd like this board to at least consider the travel time some of these people make. We sleep on our boat sometimes. If the James River's not producing oysters and they open the Saxes, I'm gonna go to the Saxes. So I'm not going to scrape, I'm going to dredge. They need to consider it. Some of us don't always dredge. Some of us don't always scrape. And the region, I'll drive 6 hours. I'll have 8 hours drive time in when I leave North and go to Saxes and come back. So for 6 hours of my day, I'm just driving to get to work. So don't deny me a license because I can't dredge or scrape in the James, and I'm dredging in the Saxes. I'm still oystering. And I still need to support my family. That's all I got.
Thank you, sir. Everyone else have a new point that hasn't been raised? Come on forward then.
Hello, my name is Wes Robbins, and I may have a new point, you may disagree, but I believe that the 1,000 plus licenses that we seem to be very concerned with is just a symptom of a larger problem that we have in our industry, which is the funneling of watermen into a very select amount of fisheries. I was a crab dredger and a crab potter, and I wouldn't even be dredging oysters if we still had crab dredging. I didn't dredge oysters while I crab dredge. And that's happening more and more. I don't think you're seeing it in oystering now, but I think you will see it have impacts that you need to prepare for in other fisheries like crab potting. I've only been in the industry for 10 years. When I came in, it was easy for me to get in the industry because there are so many people getting out of it that the gear was cheap. I could buy used stuff all over the place. Now, it seems like the crowds have come back because the people, the fisheries they're in, are no longer viable economically or regionally or for whatever reason. And I'd like to hear some discussion of how we're going to – this problem's not going to end today. It's just going to get worse. These people have to find things to do, so they go to what's available to them. Just like me, I had to oyster. I didn't want to, but I had to. So I don't think you can take the licenses and maybe that will short-term solve the problem of the pressure on the fishery. But it's just going to show back up in other fisheries in the state to the point of which I don't know what the final impact will be. But it'll be bad, in my opinion. I've seen it in crab potting this year. I went crab potting today. The river that I've last 5 years had outstanding catches in the York River. And it's not the people's fault that they're there now. But they had to go somewhere and work. And I've noticed a decline in a catch there just by the amount of gear that's there. And it's their right to do so. All they need is 2 foot by 2 foot to put their pot. And they got a license, they're allowed to do it. But it's making an impact. And I think we saw that definitely in oystering. I started oystering in Rappahannock in 2006. And there's certainly a whole lot more boats in Rappahannock than it was in 2006. But a lot of those people don't have anywhere else to go. So I think there needs to be a plan that has a broader reach that can help control some of the pressure that's being put into the fisheries that we have left. And I hope to hear that maybe somebody agrees or disagrees with that today, because I personally don't want to be shut out anymore. I'm sort of getting to the point myself personally that another loss of another fishery, I would just have to make a decision as a young person just to completely exit fishing completely, because I can't live on income like anybody can 8 months out of the year or 6 months out of the year. So I hope to hear back from you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your input. Anybody else have a point you'd like to make to the commission related to this subject that hasn't been made yet? Ms. Green, you get a last bite at the apple here, and you're double dipping, but we're going to move it along.
Gentlemen, I had one additional point I did want to make a while ago. I forgot to bring it up, but y'all come up with the idea on the oysters where the watermen would work it down to a point to where it wouldn't be no more oysters. But usually when the oystermen work it, they catch all the sellable oysters off, the 3-inch oysters or above. But that doesn't mean that there's not quantity of oysters left there on these rock scenarios. Usually there's a pretty good set from year to year. James River's an ideal show of this thing. But it's what the problem we've had, and as you've heard it so many times, is putting everybody in smaller areas and letting them congregate. This is something that's not going to work. And if y'all got any considerations, you're going to have to open larger areas. Like the Rappahannock, you will have to do one side of the bridge one season and one side of the bridge the next season. Give boats plenty of room to spread out. The James River has very little problem with this problem where everybody turn up stuff because it's a large area and the boats are all over the place and they're allowed to spread out. And you don't have the problem like you do in the York River or the Rappahannock or these other areas where they congregate. So that should be a lesson to us all. And even though when the watermen finish, we work for what's in sight. Some years I've been in the river, the first 2 or 3 weeks, we're finished. We had to tie the boats up because there was nothing there. But that don't mean it's not going to be nothing next year. We understand that. We work under these conditions. We'll have to go do something else. But that's the chance to the job we got, and that's the way we work at it. We work for what's in sight when we go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Okay.